You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, March 29th, 2023. I'm your good buddy, Joey O'Brien.
And I'm Troy. Baseball's back, LaValle.
Baseball's back, baby. Tomorrow's opening day, my friend.
It's a beautiful day for a game. Let's play two.
Let's play two. Open the season with a doubleheader. Man, back in the day, Professor Tom's, it just gets me juiced up. The memories of youth. Oh. Heading out to the barski, sitting down, grabbing a pitcher, couple wangs.
Oh,
at
man.
Like noon on a work day.
Then go back to work.
And then go back to work, beers. Sloshed. Yeah,
never had to drive. It was so easy.
Yeah, exactly. Just walk back to the office, have clients coming in, smelling your breath. You smell like Miller Lite.
Oh, man, those were the fucking days, though. So people are listening. We've probably talked about this before. There was a little bar in the East Village called Professor Tom's. It's still there, as far as I know. And it was a Red Sox bar and like Michigan football and mainly a Boston sports bar, but also Michigan. And I would go there for opening day every year to watch the Red Sox whenever I was in town. Sometimes I'd be like in Boston and the Sox were away and I'd go to like a bar outside Fenway. This is before I had kids and you could do whatever the fuck you wanted. And so I remember there was one year where you and your coworker, Matt Ambrosia, just strolled in on your lunch break. It was like me and a couple other guys that were, you know, didn't have jobs like you guys. You know, we were freelancers.
It was so heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking because it was like the third inning, maybe. Max third inning. And we had been there for like 2 hours. I was like, we really should get back to work. And like your day was just starting. You were like, see ya. And I was like, these freaking actors, I can't stand them. Had to get back to the office, the old 9 to 5. So yeah, anyway, baseball is back. Very excited for that. Not excited for this FOD. I am sick to my stomach.
Really?
About this fodder. Yeah.
Are you physically ill?
No, I am physically, I feel fantastic. Never felt better, but mentally I'm in anguish. There's multiple reasons for that I'll get into during the show, but we'll talk about that more in We Are Stupid. But
wow.
let's just do some news first. The news is the good part. The We Are Stupid just makes me hate myself.
Oh my God. Wow. I have no idea. I don't read the rundowns until we're live. So like,
yeah,
cause I like to get it fresh.
Yeah. Just stay away from it. It'll stay fresh and you'll love it. All right. Let's talk news first. Quick studio update. Oh, we can't even do the studio update that quick because Friday was a big day. Last Friday was a big day in the studio.
It was a big day in the studio. God, there's so many things. We announced a bunch of tour dates. We'll talk about that in a second. But the studio day was fucking great. We were going to record your character video. That was the original plan. I was going to come out to Jersey and do the first character video. But
and it's good we didn't because my character has changed 8 times since last Friday.
See, that's why I don't want to rush this because once it's locked in, I don't want you to make too many changes. But we realized we had an opportunity to have our cinematographer for Gatewalkers, the camera assistant that he's going to be working with for all of this preliminary stuff. You and I, Mick D, and Skid and Matthew could come. And this was very important because we needed bodies in there to set up all our brand spanking new cameras, put on all our brand spanking new lenses, use some lights that we're testing out, that our cinematographer has, and kind of see if the idea is going to work or if we need to pivot. And so we had to black out the windows and really kind of just make a mock set in there, throw some shitty tables together, and we got it all done. It took the whole fucking day, but I mean, we really were able to make some big decisions, that ultimately are holding up several other decisions. Like, there's certain things we couldn't do until we knew, like, are these lenses going to work? Do we need to buy X more cameras? How big can the table be and whatnot? And, so in that respect, it was just a great day. We had a nice sushi lunch and then, went out and had a beer at the end of the day. It was a good solid day of work.
good solid day and huge progress. It's basically the images that we saw were pretty close to what the final images of the show would look like. And so now we know what it's going to look like, and we can actually move forward with getting, you know, the important stuff in there. Not only the larger construction stuff, but also the rugs, the table, the audio equipment, the microphones, like all of that stuff couldn't go in really until first the place is cleaned. And it's just brutal because I'm going in now to clean this place, and McD just keeps saying to me, I can't believe that they rented this place in this condition. Like, he can't believe it, because I guess it's something he just doesn't understand, New York real estate. Not that he doesn't understand. I'm sure he'd be like, yeah, not surprised at all. However, it's just like, this just doesn't happen places. And if I had to do over again, I would never agree to take this place. And the reason is because they gave us a truly raw construction space. Like, even the floors are unusable. So, like, we have to start by completely redoing the floors, which is brutal. And our poor cinematographer got cement dust all over his equipment. It was so bad. And so, yeah, he was just like, it's kind of like, McD was like, isn't it illegal to, like, sell, to rent a space in this condition? Like, you can just be inhaling this, like, toxic dust. I'm like, I don't know, man. It's New York. You get what you can get. You just got to figure it out. So, that's stuff. Like, we can't bring any of our equipment in until that's all done. And hopefully that's all done this week. So, big week last week. Another big week coming this week. And then I'm going to start feeling a lot better about the shape the studio is in and our vision for what it's going to look like when we actually do the show. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most exciting thing, because I've had this idea now for months, but like having an idea and seeing, well, can we make it work in the space that we got is a completely different thing. And I really didn't want to pivot too much from the idea. I mean, you have to make compromises all the time with this kind of stuff, but I was so happy to see that like we could pull it off and then some, with the space, which again, isn't huge. It's much smaller than the old space, but this is meant to be a production studio, not a frat house. And so I think, in that respect, we are good to go. And, it was just fun to see, like, you know, some early test shots without any like fancy, lighting and, set dressing and whatnot. So it's cool.
Yeah, it was. It was really cool to just do like a raw version of it. But that's going to be our in-house show. That's going to be the, you know, our main podcast that we're recording in there. But we're going to be heading out on the road around the time that we are starting to record Gatewalkers. In the background, we're actually going to be heading out of town. And we talked about Boulder last week, but we announced a bunch of new shows since the last fodder 1 week ago. Talk to me about those shows and where people should be buying tickets.
Yeah, we sure did. So Boulder is now less than a month away, and awesomely almost sold out. That's going to be on Friday, April 21st. If you live anywhere near there, get those last few tickets. We want to sell out as many shows as possible. It makes it so easy for us to come back once we sell them out. But the four new shows that we announced are going to be May 25th. We're coming back to St. Paul, back to the Amsterdam. Ticket sales have been very strong out of the gate, as I thought they would, because I said, hey, if we come back next year, we're going to sell it out again. And they said, yeah, and it looks like they are going to. So please keep buying those ticks. Plenty still available. It hasn't even been on sale for a week. And then 2 days later, we are going to Asheville, North Carolina, and I am so excited. I hear Asheville is the shit. We're going to be playing the Gray Eagle. Now, this is a new area for us, and it's going to be our only show down south of the year. We're not coming to Atlanta this year for Dragon Con. We have no other plans right now for the south. So if you live in Florida, Atlanta, New Orleans, Mississippi.
Except for the big Key West show. We're going to do that huge Key West show, you know, topless. All of us on stage in just bathing suits, you know, that sort of vibe.
But that one's invite only. So if the only one you can get a ticket to is this Asheville show. And this is a big deal for us, because like when we try new markets, when we test new markets in, you know, this isn't like the main metropolis in North Carolina. Like, we need the niche to show up. Otherwise it doesn't allow us to try out these new markets because we lose money. So let's keep those ticket sales strong in Asheville, May 27th at the Gray Eagle. This venue looks insane. It looks like a set out of Roadhouse. And And then in June, June 29th, which is a Thursday, we're coming back to LA, the Terragram Ballroom where we were last year. That was such a fun show. And one of the best parts about that, I was saying it yesterday or 2 days ago when I was on in the employee lounge, is all of Glass Cannon West comes out to the show. So like everyone that we work with, Jared and Ross and Nora and Mary Lou and Paula, like they're all going to be there. So if you come, especially if you have VIP, you get to hang out with everybody after the show or see them just chilling. And it's always a fun time. And it's a very important show for us because we now have very strong connections in LA as our star continues to rise. And so we're going to be out there for a whole week wheeling and dealing, being able to show off to all of our new people that like, look at this packed audience in LA is big. So please, I know LA always waits till the last minute buying tickets. Don't wait. Let's sell this shit out just like the old bootleg days back at the Bootleg Theater. 2 days after LA, we're going to be in Seattle on Saturday, July 1st, back at the Triple Door where we were last year. And that's our only Pacific Northwest show of the year. We're not coming to Portland. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to make it to Vancouver. So come on down, Vancouver. Come on up, Portland. This is going to be a fun show. It's not happening during PaizoCon, so we can actually stay in Seattle proper, which I'm excited about. Always a good time. Arguably, our best, the best representation of the NACE is in the PNW. And I don't know why I'm always so mean to them, because they're our best fans.
They're the best. They're the best. I absolutely love it up there and can't wait to get back. Devastated to hear you say that we're not going to go to Vancouver. We have to go to Vancouver.
Who knows? I'm still booking October and November. If Canada wants to play ball, come on, Trudeau. Stop ducking
Canada
me.
Canada wants to play ball. Canada was staring us down and we called their bluff.
Right. We checked the ball hard back at them.
Bounce, check.
Checked it back at us.
Man, good stuff. Okay, let's go. A couple more quick items before we head into We Are Stupid and breakdown episode. What is this? Episode 68 of Strange Aeons?
Is it?
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah, it is.
Episode 68 of Strange Aeons. Before we do that, though, Labs, man, we had a great session last week in Alien. I hope you guys got to see it. If you didn't, check out the VOD on Twitch. Man, it was so fun. It was awesome. And hopefully returning in May at this stage for more Alien. But this week, there's no Labs. Labs is off this week. And then Labs is right now scheduled to return next week. We'll have more details on that game at the time. But it looks like it's going to be the first Labs run by Jared Logan. Our very own Jared Logan is going to be taking up the GM chair and running a Labs. So stay tuned next week for more details on cast and game and all that kind of stuff. What else do we got? Should we talk about the Chaosium deal that we have going in the works? Early phases, a little deal going on. Do you want to talk about that?
Give them a taste. Our good friends at Chaosium, we've been chatting with them about a little show called Time for Chaos Season 2. While we were having those conversations, they were like, hey, we are really trying to push RuneQuest. Would you guys like to do some RuneQuest? And we were like, fuck yeah, let's rune it up.
Rune it up. I like cutting off limbs.
If you watched any of our Gen Con shows last year, maybe you caught the one that Brian Holland from Chaosium did some demos with. Was it you, Matthew, and then Josephine and Paula
Nora,
Deming?
I think. No, I think it was Nora. Josephine. Oh, wait. No, you're right. It was Paula. It was Paula. Yes.
Yeah. So if you caught Brian, he's just a great dude and a phenomenal GM and a great teacher of especially their games, although I'm sure he could teach.
And he has a true passion for these games. He loves genuinely these games so much. And he is the biggest RuneQuest fan. Like when we're on a call with him, you just get infected by his passion for RuneQuest.
Yeah, you kind of want to go out and be like, maybe I get a couple box sets. It makes it sound so good. I'm on eBay.
Totally.
Looking for old copies of the original RuneQuest. We're going to do a little series of RuneQuest, and I think you and I are going to play on it.
Yeah, I think we're going to be players. Brian GMing it. It should be fun. Just a few episodes, just a little taste. As of now, the plan is, it'll stream live on Twitch. It'll be released in a podcast you can listen to. It'll be on YouTube, all that stuff. So, yeah, it should be a fun little kind of a one-shot that Chaosium wants to sponsor on the network. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, it's a very different, unique system. You know what I mean? There are similarities to other Chaosium games, but the combat the sort of deep, deciding where you're hitting and what part of the body combat, I think you're going to get way into. And you dabbled with it a little. Obviously, I ran it for New Game Who Dis back in the day. People who love RuneQuest are way into it. So I'm going in like
just, I remember
wanting to get into it.
If I remember it correctly, because I did three demos in like 90 minutes during that session. And if I remember correctly, I really liked the magic too, the magic system. It's kind of like gritty and you only have like very small amount of magical resources that you can use and it feels really intense. Those, I think they're called like runes or rituals or something. I can't remember. But
there's runic magic. It's a very complex system.
Yeah,
but it's cool. If you like crunch, bring some milk.
We love digging into that crunch. But also, I should say, like, just to give you guys an idea of the production schedules and the way that these things work, like, we're talking about this deal right now because we're pretty close to closing it all up and casting it and being ready to start recording and stuff like that. And my guess is you won't hear about it again from us for months, and I don't think you'll see it until July. Like, I think that's when it's going to air. So that's sort of like the timelines that we deal with these production schedules to do a show right and to release it at a time that works for the production publishing companies and everything. It takes a really long time. This is just a tease to let you know this summer coming. Little RuneQuest series that should be fun with Troy and I and hopefully a couple awesome performers.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen on the store, there's a new dice tray for sale, a dice tray that is so sick and is so beautiful that, I highly recommend you check it out. You can go to right to the Red Star website and look at it there, or you can come to our website at glasscannonnetwork.com and just search or hit the store button on the menu, and it'll take you there. And you gotta check this dice tray out. It's a nice mobile folding dice tray with the logo on. It's gorgeous. I highly recommend you check it out. If you're looking for a new dice tray or a gift for a member of the Nash.
Do you have one?
I do not. I don't get any of the merch for free anymore because you won't allow it.
Well, I have one.
I know you do. You have one of everything.
And it's pretty great.
Yeah.
And we just love these travel ones, you know, especially now that people are back hanging out with each other in person. You travel into your buddy's house. Fucking slip the dice tray in your bag. Don't roll on the table like a plebe.
Quick note on employee lounge streams. Last week, I did end up playing some Last Spell. I loved it. I think everybody had a great time. And I'm looking forward to doing some more of that as soon as I can get a chance. You are still running through Dark Souls. How did you make out with the Great Hollow? And
Yeah, I did that on Monday. I did the Great Hollow and Ash Lake. Yeah, Ash Lake is just a
it's
Hydra.
It's kind of just like an NPC meetup, right?
Well, if you do that quest line, which I haven't finished yet, so I got to fucking go back to Ash Lake. It's a whole thing. But I did the Great Hollow, and I had like practice offline to make sure that I could get everything. This Great Hollow is just a pain in the ass. You got to make sure you get all the items while you're falling, and then you got to get all these crystal lizards. There's 10 of them, and I got all of them. It was a fun stream, yeah. But you have to like quit and restart
Dark
the game.
I think I've played Dark Souls through like 5 times. I think I've beaten it 5 times, and I have never come close to getting 10 crystal lizards in the Great Hollow. Because like after I've gotten like 7 or 8, I'm like, I'm done with this, and I just
because you have to quit and restart the game, and then sometimes they appear and sometimes they don't.
Right,
so I did it all on stream. It was fun. So yeah, we're kind of getting into the end game there, but it's a great release, and I don't know. We the crew that hangs out and watches that, it's a really fun crew.
A really special crew that enjoys that kind of torture. That special kind of watching someone be tortured.
Are you going to be doing the Elden Ring DLC when it comes out?
Oh, hell yeah. But it's not coming out for a while, like a long time.
I'm glad about that because I want to I might start a fresh game after all this and build my way back up to the DLC. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a whole new run through of Elden Ring.
Oh, you are?
Did I tell you about that? Yeah, did I tell you about doing the, I'm going to do a gymmer run
on Elden characters. Ring.
Yeah, so I'm going to do like a pure strength, no magic, all kind of, like, I'm thinking two-handed, heaviest weapons in the game kind of build, like a strength 50 weapons. I never do that. And I also never go full magic. And I did that with the Gormley run, and I had a blast.
Let me ask you.
The strength run is going to be more challenging, but I'm curious to see how it goes.
Oh, no, it won't be more challenging. It's when you, if you go true strength, You'll be playing it on easy mode by the end. But the difference is you got to get up close. And so you got to make sure you go vitality as well. However, on your intelligence build, were you pure magic or could you have intelligence scaling weapons in case you wanted to do some melee?
Yeah, that's what I did. I had an intelligence scaling sword that I would do for melee, but I very rarely did melee. I just mostly did summon in, you know, Black Knife Tiche mostly, or very rare, basically a tank, right? Summon in a tank, and then I would just stay back and blast, and I just would melt bosses. The first true challenge that I came up against in that entire run was, what's her name? Millennia. That was the first one that I almost couldn't beat, like, with the build. I almost had to, like, re-spec, because I lost, like, 30 times, whereas with my Faith strength build, my paladin build, I beat Millennia like the third try because she is weak to poise damage, so I could just knock her down, you know what I mean? And like when I couldn't deal enough damage to knock her down as a caster, when she zeroed in on me and just closed and sliced me up, like there was nothing I could do. I was a glass cannon. I was a true glass cannon. And but eventually I had to go back into the game and get spells I didn't have, and I had to do all this shit to make it work, but I made it work and it was really fun.
That's cool.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm curious about that strength build. We'll get to that soon. All right, let's get into a little We Are Stupid. We're already 20 minutes into this show, and we've got plenty to talk about, I think. This is going to be a juicy one. First one out of the gate from our good friend, Professor Eric, and a huge thank you to Eric once again, every week, for going through and nitpicking. And this is what we love. We love nitpicking. Pull every little tiny thing out. There is nothing that is too nitpicky for us, because ultimately we just want to know. And if it is something that we're going to do that way anyway, we'll just do it that way anyway. It's fine. But we want to know. First one that comes up is kind of a big one. It brings up news to me. At one point, Aldo, on his second attack, rolled a 13, which was a miss. And Eric is saying, by his math, there is no way that that wasn't a critical miss because of the ACs of these creatures.
Right.
Even if it was flat-footed, he says. Even if it was frightened. He thinks it would have to be flat-footed and frightened, too, in order to not be a critical fail.
Okay.
And he doesn't think that's the case. If you critically fail, you do no splash damage.
Mm.
Which I never knew. I did not realize that.
That's good, yeah. Because didn't I prompt him and be like, isn't that supposed to be splash damage? And he was like, oh, yeah, splash damage. I'm like, all right, so you still got the splash. I don't know if it was that occurrence, but I remember.
No, I don't think it was that occurrence. I think we just took it in stride as like it should just be that way. But the thing that really bothers me is it killed the enemy. That was the killing blow. So like, because it just happened to only have like 2 hit points left or 3 hit points left or something like that. So you look back and you're just like, this is awful. And that's not why I'm sick to my stomach about this. We're going to get into that now.
I don't know what you're upset about.
There's two things. One is nothing makes me more irritated than when you and I correct something on fodder and then happen to do it after an episode recording so that the next week the same problem keeps happening. It just drives into my brain in such a horrible way that I'm sure it does for some listeners who are like, how are you still getting this wrong? Right. And so this entire week, we still are not destroying mirror images on misses.
So still, really?
Yeah. Well, because we recorded it before recorded that. We actually recorded it the night before we recorded that fodder and got all those updates. So, like, wow. It was so frustrating to listen to. So that was one reason. The next one is coming up, and it's I cheated, which I just hate. And this is going to be a bad one. You're going to hate this.
Okay. I'm ready.
The grapple on the Yellow King. My illusion. Remember, you hated this the whole time, and I kept that guy out there.
I know. I just don't want to upset you at a certain point, even though I don't like what you're doing.
Well, we're going to talk about that more in a second. We'll dig into that. But there is just, according to Eric, he's fine with the ruling. He thinks it's different ways to go about this. However, the grapple on the illusory creature, if you strike the creature, it immediately destroys it. And he's saying, you know, the grapple, we have to remember, has the attack trait. And so even though he wasn't trying to harm or destroy the creature, it still, in essence, is an attack. So if the image is hit by an attack or fails a save, the spell ends, and he says the grapple has the attack trait. I always forget that those things carry those traits. Now, the funny thing is, like, I would say, oh, well, a grapple takes the multiple attack penalty, obviously, because it has the attack trait. But then my brain wouldn't also line that up for, like, it is not an attack in the sense of trying to harm it, so it wouldn't end the spell. And so I kept that creature around when I shouldn't have, and you were very mad the creature was around anyway, so it should have never happened. And it
right.
was like a whole round, which just sucks. It feels like cheating. I hate it. The next thing is, now this goes back the other way, is when you fail to disbelieve that illusion, it is the ruling of Professor Eric. If he was in charge, it is the ruling that when the creature fails the roll to disbelieve, he does not get another roll to disbelieve unless something changes. Like, unless something in this situation changes. Either I do something with the character that is just so unbelievably not in that character's personality or something, or he said, if one of the other denizens disbelieves it and says, like, yo, that shit's not real, dude. Like, that can be a quick way to get another free roll to disbelieve it.
But what if he continues to attack it? Wouldn't each attack just trigger the will save? No, regardless?
Not if he misses. If he hits it, it's just destroyed. You know what I mean? Like, it goes away immediately.
So it has an AC? I can't remember.
Yes, it has an AC.
All right. So as long as I hit it, I had then get the chance to disbelieve.
No, when you hit it, it is just destroyed.
Okay. But when I interact with it, I think even if I miss, as long as it has the attack trait, I have a chance to disbelieve it. No?
Just the first time. And then you believe it's real. Unless you do something different. Like, if you keep attacking and keep missing, why would you think it's different than it was the time before?
That I get, yeah. So yeah. I was just giving myself the free chance to disbelieve it every time.
Right. So, you know, he's like, usually with disbelieving, something has to change in order to get a new roll on it. He liked our ruling that the creature attacking the guy and missing hitting and then rolling on an image did destroy an image. Because he was like, the illusory creature, while it is an illusion, it does have the ability to attack. It does have the ability to do damage. If you just go by the traits on the abilities versus the spell, he thinks it should destroy an image by raw. So yeah. That was good.
It's kind of like you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I guess. And so this just brings me to my question. You got fired up again about illusions. And I just want to bring it up because I think it's important. We have to understand. You're playing in a game with an illusionist. You need to get over this. Well, actually, that's not what I mean to say. What I mean to say is I want you to defend yourself. No, that's not what I want to say, because that sounds like you're wrong already, even though you are. I do want you to explain, and I don't want to judge you, why you hate illusions so much.
I hate them because in the grand scheme of the game, as I'm GMing, I'm trying to streamline what I have to do in order to tell a good story. And illusion magic adds a wrench into that because it by nature just allows a lot more, judgment call. And that's fine. That's part of being a GM is judgment call. But like when it's constant judgment call, it's just hard to like, and I think we've been inconsistent with it for so long as well that it's hard to kind of settle on what do we decide on this? So that, I guess that's why, because it even makes me do that. Whereas like when Matthew swings and misses, it's very easy to adjudicate. Whereas with illusion magic, I forget what we decided last time. And then it always seems different because you're getting more powerful as well. And I'm like, wait a minute. Last time I just hit it and disappeared. And you're like, no, this is illusionary, blah, blah, blah. It's a seventh level spell. I can't keep up with this shit. But yeah, I guess that's why. It's just because there's a lot more.
It's a tiresome nature of adjudicating every time and not having a crystal clear, like, yeah, way to just go about it. I get it. I get it. I think that I wanted to build an illusionist because we've never had one in our games and nobody ever builds an illusionist. And I think that it has rare and minor, not minor impact. It has rare, solid impact. You know what I mean? A lot of times I'm just doing telekinetic projectile or shooting off a lightning bolt. You know what I mean? So the times when illusions really work, I think, are a little bit more rare. And so I understand the frustration of having to adjudicate, but I think that they spice up the game for me in an interesting way rather than just being a blaster, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I'm really nitpicking. I just have to, like, come to a conclusion about it, and then we know exactly how to do it. But I don't think about it at all until we're in the moment. And then I'm like, bah, and we're live. We don't edit these things. But, you know, I'll tell you, I've been diving back into the core rule book a lot, and I've been really just reading it page for page, very dryly.
Yeah, you sent out that email the other day with all the page listings of, like, where explaining each of the skills, explaining blah, 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 and you sent it out to everybody, and you were like, you should be rereading this because this stuff comes up every single week.
Yeah, it's 78 pages out of the core rulebook. I'm like, you just really need
78 total pages.
78 total pages out of almost 700. I was like, these are the ones that you need to be reading all the time. So at night now, I just sit with the book. And so I was reading about illusion magic and, you know, for me, it's just like, once the character disbelieves it, that should be the end of the story. Now, there is gray area with that as well. The example they use in the book is like, if you push someone through an illusory door and they fall through an illusory door, but they fail to, they've now interacted with it, but they roll the will save. If they don't disbelieve it, even though they know there isn't a door there, they still can't see through it because they think there's like a mind eye connection that isn't working. And I like that. I love that expression. But I think, like, it's what triggers the check to disbelieve that you and I just have to be on the same page on. I think we're just in our discussion earlier. I think we're figuring that out. But once he disbelieves, it's almost like that's almost the end of the story, although there are exceptions to that as well.
Yeah. I think disbelieving is pretty much the end of the story. I mean, think of it this is the way that I think about it. Don't think about it in the context of illusion. Think about it in the context of all spells.
Mm-hmm.
If you roll a natural 2, you should be penalized for that. You rolled a natural 2 on the save to the illusion. If you rolled a natural 2 to the save on Phantasmal Killer, as another action, you don't just get another free save. You know what I mean? Like, you failed it, dude. It's over. And so illusion needs to be the same way. Now, the difference is that maybe you can creatively create a reason you could get another save. And I think that that's kind of fun. But I do think that, for example, if there's a big pit that's put in front of you and that pit is an illusion and you roll to disbelieve it and you believe it, then that needs to you can't, like, just because you as the GM know it's not there, you can't come up with another reason to think like it can't be there. You as the character, you have to be like, oh no, it's there. This magical spell just put an actual pit there and find a way to work around it. And all it does is buy a round. And that's what most of these spells, that's what you want. You want to buy a round, you know?
And I think I'm being pretty good about, like, all right, I'm going to attack this creature. You know, you're eating those rounds. And so don't forget that sometimes, even if it seems like you're only getting one round of me not attacking you guys or your allies, that's huge.
Yeah, no, I think all I want, my target 9 times out of 10 is one round. In fact, I think that, you know, arguing on your side, I think it's kind of tough that that you only got one round out of the suggestion with Suki as the giant bear.
Well, Skid started this, and he knows it. You know, nobody wants to play along. That's up to the player. I can't be like, guys, I really want you to play the game right. You know what I mean? I understand. Suggestion sucks. You don't want to be out for X amount of rounds.
But, and you, like, don't want to look stupid.
You don't want to look stupid. And I get that. But that's part of the give and take of balance of the game. Because when you don't follow my suggestion, now I'm going to do something you're really not going to like, to kind of punish you for not playing along.
But if
I always
buy
say
in,
that, like, yeah. Sorry, I always say that, like, what we do, especially for actual play, is like a wrestling match. It's like a WWE wrestling match. We all need to understand that this is part of the show. You know, there's a great moment in the Colonel Luther in Raiders of the Lost Continent where Colonel Luther goes off alone and is attacked by a much more powerful creature. And, like, in that moment, I'm thinking, like, okay, Skid's probably, he has the opportunity to kill me here. what are we doing here? We're doing the dance. We're putting on a show. It's the main event of WrestleMania. We're putting on a show here. I understand there are real stakes, but like, you got to sell it. You've really got to sell it for the audience. And so if I cast suggestion and you don't want to play along, you've made your decision. That's fine. But now I'm going to bring the hammer and to kind of make up for the round or two that I was supposed to get from suggestion. I'm going to hurt you.
Right.
And that happens in wrestling.
And on the other end of things, it's like if you take that suggestion and say, as the bear, you're like, you know, you spend a whole round looking for honey and it's not there. Then you spend another round scratching at the walls. And then you're like, there's nothing here. Like, you'll be rewarded for that. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to then punish and kill all their allies because they spent two rounds under the suggestion. It's a WWE match is a really great metaphor for what this all is, because I didn't do much wrestling. I didn't watch as much wrestling as you. I wasn't as into it as you, but I got to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed watching GLOW. Did you ever watch GLOW?
I watched like the first two episodes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching GLOW. And one of the things that they made clear in that show is like, while some things are kind of loosely scripted, like, it is a lot of improv. It's a lot of like feeling each other out in the moment and just deciding what's the best way to end this fight. Like, now there isn't, we don't go in deciding the winner every time. You know what I mean? So like, it's neat and a fun way to think about role-playing games.
Yeah, you call it on the fly a lot. But yeah, this, you're making me think of something. Like, I think in our game, or certainly the way we started out, there was this competition between the GM and the players. Giant Slayer very much felt like that, because that's the sort of atmosphere that I created. And that's carried over into a lot of the games that I GM, even though a lot of it is just for show. I think that that feeling is still there. I wish we could move away from that. And because, like, if I cast mind control on you and now you're attacking your allies, I want you to like fail that save and be so fucking psyched that you now get to play that. And that's not what happens in our games. And it's not a criticism of anyone in particular. It's just like, there is this like fear of survival that kicks in, of you're too precious about the PCs that you're like, I don't want to do this. I'm going to use
your allies.
Or your allies.
You don't want to be responsible in a way for hurting your allies. And you don't want to look like you're enjoying it to somebody that's going to die, you know? I think that, yeah, you're not blaming us, but we also are the majority in the landscape of tabletop RPGs. But I agree with you that, like, we need to be better.
You got to lean into that. It makes for such a better show. One of the reasons Haunted City is so wonderful is, like, Ross and Josephine and Abu love being put in horrible situations.
They thrive and putting each other in horrible situations.
They thrive off of it. And like in games like D&D and Pathfinder, I think there's this fear. It's like all about self-preservation of a fictional character. You make for such a better show when you just lean into the adversity. If you lean into the adversity, I'm not going to double down. You know, sometimes I will, because I think that's best for the story. But like, what I'm going to do is like, I'm going to play along with you. We're going to sell this match together. If you're just like, fuck, I don't want to do this, you're changing the script.
Yeah.
You're no butting instead of yes anding.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, everything that you say sounds great to me. Your honeyed words are charming me, but it is in the moment, it is difficult.
It's
difficult for groups, you know, and it's hard. But yeah, I think we could be better. And we do. I think Matthew's great at that. You know, Matthew to me never feels precious about his characters and is very much so. Embraces failure in a way that not too many of us do. But he also likes to nitpick at like little mathy things and stuff to just like try to get every way around things too. So yeah, it's tough. It's just a mixture of personalities.
Matthew and I don't see eye to eye on anything, but I think he's the best at that. He's the best at just yes-anding and rolling with the punches. And that's probably why so many of his characters have died.
And why so many of his characters are so beloved. yeah. right? Because like they go through this adversity, they face it head on, they embrace it. It's great for story.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that because I think there's a whole post on the subreddit right now about how in re-listening to Giant Slayer, Matthew is the true hero of the story because he's constantly putting himself on the line and putting his characters' lives on the line to try and help other people. but it's, dude, it is. It's definitely easier said than done, but... And I hope everybody listens to Cannon Fodder and takes this to heart because I've been sending you guys lots of like emails like, let's do this, let's do this, let's just kind of hype people up. I want to just get it out of our system because I want this next show and the continuation of the tour to be something totally different and to kind of throw away the baggage of the past and move on to something better, the best that we can do.
Few more items and then we'll wrap up. I asked a question during the show that Professor Eric has answered for me. Do all large creatures have reach, like native reach? I was curious. It came up when Suki as the bear was going to attack something 10 feet away. And I was like, do you need to look up if a bear has reach? You know, like, and he said Professor Eric said the answer is no, not all large creatures have reach. It needs to be explicitly stated in the stat block, which in this case it is for animal form. It does have, it says 10 feet reach. And so Suki was well within her rights to use it, but there's a table 9-1 in the core rulebook lists the general expectation for different sizes, which distinguishes between tall versus long large creatures. Long large creatures, I think, generally do not have reach. I don't know which one's which, but
yeah,
anyway,
I'm
it
looking
needs
at
to say reach. You don't just assume because it has because it takes up a 10-foot square that it can attack 10 feet away.
Yeah, and you shouldn't also assume that all appendages have reach. I think as well, because if you look at the entry for
like
troll,
a claw or a tentacle could have reach and a bite could not.
Right.
Possibly.
Now, looking at a troll here, CR5, its jaws have reach 10 feet, claw has reach 10 feet, and it's right after its other properties like finesse, agile. It just tells you if it has reach. But I'm sure there are some, I shouldn't say I'm sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are some large creatures or huge or gargantuan that have X amount of reach for certain appendages, but not for all.
Yeah, good thing to keep an eye out for.
It's like a weapon property, basically.
We also had some questions come up about persistent damage. This is something that we've been facing week in and week out now on the show. A good summary here from Professor Eric on a few things that I didn't know. Healing, and I knew this at one time, and when I read it, I remembered. When I read his note, I remembered. Healing to full hit points automatically stops bleed.
Yeah.
So like in the previous version in 1E, any magical healing stopped bleed, but in this one, you have to go to full HP. The other note here is we asked about, well, if you don't, does persistent damage just keep going and going and going if you don't roll a flat check of DC 15, like until you die? Like what happens when the combat's over? And he brought out a line from page 621 of the core rulebook. Persistence damage runs its course and automatically ends after a certain time as fire burns out, blood clots, and the like. The GM determines when this occurs, but it usually takes 1 minute. So generally speaking in the game, it's a good base to start at is 10 rounds after you've taken this persistent damage. If you can't get that flat check, it just still ends on its own.
Well, that's interesting, though. So a combat ends after 6 rounds. Should I then make you roll 4 more flat checks and grind the game to a halt? Or do
you
I
should if
the
there's
difference?
An immediate encounter coming next? Or, you know what I mean? If you
Let's
know.
Say there isn't. But, like, if healing is a limited resource, obviously it's less limited now than it was in 1E, and there's 4 rounds left, but I don't want to go through the whole flat check, D6 damage. However, doing so means you might lose another 18 hit points, which means now you've got to find another resource for healing. I'm trying to figure out how to marry those two things. Like, I don't want to go through the flat checks, but if you were to fail 4 more and lose 18 more hit points, now you might go into the next battle 18 down. I don't know how to do that. And if I don't do it, because I'm like, it doesn't matter, I'm telegraphing to you that there isn't another relevant encounter coming up this day.
Agreed. It is a tricky situation. It's no good for a show to roll 4 flat checks and roll the damage each time, right? Let's say it's D8 persistent.
Yeah.
It's like, roll a D20, roll a D8, roll a D20, roll a D8, roll a D20. It doesn't have the same like, oh no, each time. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you do. Maybe you just do 1 flat check to be like the remainder of the rounds come down to this 1 flat check.
This is it. If you fail, you're going to get 4d6 damage. Like,
right.
That's just brutal.
It is brutal, but like, yeah, that's... something to think about.
You know, yeah, I know. They're way you can automate it. Obviously, some of the VTTs we're playing with, it automates it for you and it rolls the recovery check automatically. But that still takes time that I don't want to waste. But I also want, and even 10 rounds is, we're kind of pulling that number out. 1 minute is kind of the standard. But what if you're X amount of hit points away from death? Now we've got to stay in round order so that the person who can heal can come up and stop that. And what if they fail? So I guess there's dramatic moments to do it. But let's assume that 80% of them aren't dramatic, but it still could affect the game. Oh, I don't know, man. We used to do off-air healing. Do we have to do off-air persistent damage checks now? Maybe.
Maybe.
That might just be strange.
Must be something that gets edited. Yeah. That's a tough question. That's a tough question. It's definitely something to think about. Yeah. Let us know. Write in. See, tell us what you think. And you too, Professor Eric. I know that you're going to check in on this. He didn't, a lot of times he also offers like opinions on what he would do, at a PFS table or some such. Let us know, you know, how do you think about it? Because Eric also does a great job, I feel, of thinking about it like a show. He's like, I know this is a show, and I would do this differently because it's a show. So, see if you can come up with a solution we haven't thought of. That's going to do it for me, buddy. Those are all my notes. Do you have anything
else? That wasn't
so
bad.
Did you want to talk about? It makes me sick to talk about. I hated because there are two big things. Because I listened to the episode, and that's what makes me sick, is because it's over and over again, we're not destroying images, over and over, after a published fodder where we said we knew that this was the rule, right? And it just bothers me. And then the other one was to know that that image should have been destroyed and that he was around for an entire round, that you were belly aching the whole time that he was around, and that I kept reinforcing that he should be around and that it's great that he's around, and I was wrong the entire time. And so listening to myself do that, it makes me sick to my stomach. I hate
it's good to listen to yourself though, because then you're like, why am I doing this? Why do I, you know, for everybody, dude, not just you.
I will throw myself fully under the bus. Let's go back 2 weeks, episode 67 of Strange Aeons. I definitely need to throw myself under the bus based on our conversation today about, you know, getting mad and all that stuff. It's so hard for me. You know, it's so difficult for me not to. It's just in my blood. It's in my Irish rage blood. I am a barbarian in real life. And it's not so much antagonistic against you as much as it is dice, right? Just dice rolls. I hate when the random luck just does not go my way. It really irks me sometimes. And in this case, it was a lightning bolt. It was a lightning bolt that went through two of your guys. They lined up. I was so excited. It was like the rare chance that I can use a great lightning bolt. I burst it off and you rolled like a 37 or 38 on the save, which is a critical save. You just take no damage. And then the other one rolled like a 31 or something like that and took half damage. And it just caught me at a bad time. And I was just in a bad mood. And I was tired and it was late. And I was just like, fuck you, Troy. Like, and it was so, when I was listening back to it, I was like, really landed that K. Like, that was a little much for the moment. It's like, okay, note to self, dial it back a little bit, just because, you know, you wanted to do more damage than you did. There's no reason to throw around hard F-bombs at your good friends.
Let me ask you this. Let me put you on the hot seat without making you mad. I want to give you a chance to respond to this. You've seen a lot of people chatting about, and some people completely disagree with this, that you drive too many other people's actions and people's characters. I want to give you a chance to respond to this, because I think it's a super fine line, and I think maybe sometimes you do, and sometimes it may seem like you do when you're not, and so there's just this like bias that you get blamed, and I get blamed for that shit all the time, too. It's like there's this bias, even when I'm not doing the things that people complain about, they complain about it because there's this bias. But I think this might be an interesting discussion because I saw it was a big topic on the boards recently. Legacy, maybe a little bit, and Strange Aeons as well.
Legacy and Strange Aeons. Yeah, I'm trying to think back to the episodes that aired, and what they might be talking about. I haven't seen these things, but I mean, I think it's, I haven't seen the boards, but I think it's safe to say for myself, like this has been a problem, quote unquote, you know, my entire life. It's like, you know, like I'm just a person that says, you know, what I think when I want to help you or the situation. And I think that that gets me into trouble all the time. You know, I'm just a very, like, I want to be involved. It is hard for me to sit back in all walks of life and just, like, let people do things that I don't agree with. It's just very difficult for me.
Yeah.
And tabletop role-playing really highlights it in a bad way, because most of the time, you should not be doing any such thing. And these characters should be doing whatever they want. And even if it's a bad decision or a bad situation, it creates great story. It creates drama. It creates conflict. If everybody just, you know, it's like when you look, one of my favorite, I think it was, I can't remember who it was. I don't know if it was David Winters. I was talking to somebody about how much I loved Pandemic when that first came out, that board game. I was like, never played a game like this, like a really good cooperative board game. And they were just like, yeah, I mean, it's a good game. It's a well-designed game. But the problem is it really just usually ends up being someone telling everybody else what to do. The person that knows the game the most. And that's why I'm not like a huge fan of cooperative games. And I was like, yeah, I can kind of see that. Like, I get that. I get that perspective. And so when it comes to tabletop RPGs, yes, it's better to ease off. In my defense, what I'll say is a lot of the times what you're hearing is me double checking that people even know the rules or the situation before they're making these decisions. Like, I think that there's times that people are making decisions with imperfect information. They're not aware that what they're doing, that they had another option, or that rule doesn't work that way or whatever. And I bring that to their attention, and knowing that, they change their objective. And I can absolutely see audience members being like, I don't like that. I wanted them to do the first thing because it would have killed them. And I want to see more people die. Like, I get that. I get that. But like, that's usually when I think that it is warranted and okay, and like when my fellow players don't mind it, I guess. But yeah, I mean, when the players, you know, I just, when people make a bold, rash decision that's going to put themselves and everyone else in harm's way, Matthew does that all the time. And I don't like make him change his action. It's because I know Matthew knows what he wants to do, and he knows the options, and he's choosing this one.
And if you give Matthew another option, he'll definitely not take yours. Just out of spite.
Oh, no, 100%. 100%. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the short answer is, like, you got to do it less, but it is a fine line, and it is not an absolute. Like, people need help at the table, too. Yeah. You need to help people play the game sometimes. And when I've been playing it a lot longer, and it isn't just strategy, it's also just rules, you know, basic rules knowledge. And also, I think that there's a little bit of in-character stuff, too. Right. Yeah. I think if I'm thinking of the thing that probably came up in Legacy, it's like, if a character does something that is asinine in the basic battle strategy of any known basic battle, you know, that any basic battle character would know is a bad strategic idea. If I say that in character, my character being a soldier and an expert in battle and says, get back over here, don't expose yourself and all of us to harm in that way. What, my character can't say that because their character said it? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's also a fine line. It's like, what can you say in character, out of character? But yeah, it's tough. And I wish that I never said anything. But sometimes hard, I listen back to shows and I think, if I didn't say anything, this show would be so fucking boring because no one would speak unless it was their turn, which is just lame at my table. I don't like tables like that. I like everybody getting into the thick of it. I like a lot of raucous talk about everything everyone's doing. I like good reactions. You know what I mean? I agree that like the best part to cut out of that is you saying, don't do that. Your character wouldn't do that. That's a dumb and stupid thing to say. And I know that sometimes I cross into that, and it's just about weeding that out. But, you know, we're imperfect people.
It's hard, man. It's real hard. It's hard to sit there sometimes be like, that is, you just know, like, that is a bad idea. Or there are so many better ideas out there. Like, how do you not? I see it too. I'm just like, why did you do that when there's a much cooler thing you could do there? Yeah. But it is a really tricky fine line. And, you know, we have the benefit of like, we're all friends around the table, but even our relationships are very, very different. You know, people always like to say, and I see this a lot of times in like Patreon exit surveys, which I read every single day, 7 days a week, I read, why are people deciding not to no longer be a subscriber? And I see this all the time. It's like, this started out as four friends at the table, and now it's just a bunch of actors or something like that. And I can't help but think, it never started out as four friends at the table. It started out as a couple of friends and a couple other people that were friends of friends, you know?
Yeah, that were gamers that we didn't know that well.
Right.
And didn't know how they play, you know?
It was never, this never started out as four friends around the table. They're people that became friends. But even those relationships between person A and B and A and C and A and D and B and C and B and D, like, are wildly different and varying levels of closeness. And so I always, that's just kind of like a side comment that makes me think of this. Like, did we become friends? Sure. But it's a lot more, there's a lot more nuance and complication than that. Well, likewise, like, your relationship with Nick is much more different than your relationship with Sydney, for example. Do you know what I mean? Like, so the way you might approach a Nick trying to drive Nick is going to be different from the way you might play one of Sydney's characters. And it all has to do with these relationships. It's a very complicated thing. Anybody that plays this game understands that relationships at the table are very protean. They're constantly changing, and we're figuring this out as we go along. But I don't know. I think you tread a good line. And the fact that you sometimes go over the line is what makes your personality such a rich part of the show experience. You know what I mean? Beyond the game and the story. And the people who love that, love that. Dude, there are people that hate me, but still listen to everything we put out, you know, because they love Matthew, or they love you, or they love Skid. There's people that don't like, there's not many people that don't like Matthew, but let's say there's a couple people that don't like Matthew.
You know, I always felt that way back in the day. I was always like, man, Matthew must have such a great time reading the subreddit.
I love seeing a good Matthew dig come in. It's like, fucking tired of this guy. I'm like, finally.
Tired of Matthew backseat driving Joe's character.
Finally, they see what I see. No, but it's a very complex thing. But I think that's what makes us so unique and so different is like there's a lot of strong personalities, and that's what makes this show rich beyond the stories that we tell.
Yeah. I mean, you got to have strong personalities. You know, it's like when we heard complaints. I promise this is not about sports as much as it is about teams. Like when you hear complaints that your quarterback or on your professional team is quote unquote arrogant, you know, I'm always like, who do you want at quarterback? You want somebody that isn't unbelievably, ridiculously confident in themselves and their abilities? Like, do you want somebody who's like, I'm really not sure what I'm doing. Could you help me? Like, that's not what you want at quarterback. So it's a fine line. You got to take the good with the bad. You know what I mean? Like, there's definitely some bad. I'm not saying that, like, I couldn't always improve. And there are times when I listen to these episodes and I just cringe. I cringe at things that I said or did in the moment, you know, whether it's backseat driving or just overall talking too much. I just shut up a little bit more, but I get excited. When I play, I get excited. I get fired up. You know, that's what it is. And here's one more point before we get out of here, because now that you mentioned Nick, I'm remembering a specific example where I feel like Nick was going to, it was my opinion that Nick was going to put himself in such unbelievable danger, like classic Nick death cleric danger, where when I was running the game as his cleric, he did the same exact thing and he died immediately. And the whole party was just like, why did you do that? You know? And so he did the same exact thing, and I waved him off, and I'm sure that people were upset about this. But let me ask you, those of you that were upset about it, I want to ask you this question. If he went out and exposed himself to this unbelievable danger, and then was surrounded and trounced and put down because he has no, you know, his character has no armor, has no ability to defend herself, and is just, bam, put down. And we are, you know, whatever, I'm 60, 80 feet away. I'm not really a healer. I've got other problems, you know, dealing with there. And my character decides to not go help because I'm dealing with this thing over here. Like, do you think that, like, your next argument would be, Joe really needed to go help Nick. And this is, Joe's a real bad player and a bad friend at the table. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, well, where's the line? You know what I mean? Like, like, can I play this way that I want to play and see that Nick is punished, you know, in his way for the thing that he does? Or do we all just like scramble around like, ah, because one person did something silly? You know, it does cross over into that area with like, when you're like, you're at a PFS table, right? Like, and if somebody does something that other people are like, you're going to risk all of our characters' lives, they'll be like, don't do that. What are you doing? And people don't like that. And I understand why people don't like that. But it's tough because then it's like, okay, so then we all have to ruin our game because one person made this decision, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of like you have to make your case and be like, just want to throw this out there. If you do that, you might die. And then they could be like, fuck it. I don't care. Be like, I at least said it, and now I can sleep tonight.
100% of the time. I, you know what? I'd like for people to pull for me the argument where I said it a second time. You know what I mean? Like where I said it, where I said, don't you want to be here so that you could flank? And they said, you know what? No, because of this. And even if I didn't agree with it, where I said, no, don't do that. You need to flank here because I need to do this in this round. Like, show me the time that that happened. Usually it's me being like, you should try this. And then being like, you know what? Yeah, I am going to do that. And then people are like, you're driving all the characters. I don't get it in that situation.
Yeah.
It's like letting people know the options. But yeah, if they say, oh, I'm aware, Joe, shut up, I'm doing this anyway, and it's going to maybe kill me and maybe kill multiple characters, I'm fine with it. I really am. It's not about being precious about characters. It's just about, you know, do people know the options that they have, you know, before they start diving into ones that don't make any sense to me.
We would not have a network without Joe O'Brien. I think we can all agree with that.
And with that, we'll close it up. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for hanging out. Troy, thanks for putting me on the hot seat at the end there, you son of a bitch. Yeah, I think we should do more fodders where we just point out flaws in each other's personality that have little to do with the game and are just about how you were born. It really makes you feel good to start your day.
All things right. One can't fix through years of therapy. Let's talk right. about it. On Cannon Fodder.
Let's talk about it on Cannon Fodder. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Let's all try to be better as people and as players and as GMs. Until next time, have a good one, everybody. Bye. Woo!
Thanks for listening to the Glass Cannon Network. For more podcasts and live streams, visit glasscannonnetwork.com. And for exclusive shows and content you can't find anywhere else, subscribe today at patreon.com/glasscannon.